From the macabre minds of Laughing Devil Production comes another story from the Nightshade Diary. You know what that means. Check under the bed and make sure no one or nothing is there. Is the closet door securely shut? Then leave your disbelief behind, amp up your imagination, and hang on tight for another ride into terror and mystery. And like all good horror stories, just imagine it's a dark and stormy night. And remember, screaming like a little girl is permitted. The Trunk Lady by Ray Bradbury. Johnny Menlow kicked his shoes and sat down hard on the bottom of the attic stairs. His teacher, his special private tutor, was not coming after all, so he wouldn't have someone in the house all to himself. Downstairs, the party was running full blast. The sounds of it came up mockingly, the laughter, the cocktail shakers clinking, the music. Johnny thought he had gotten away from its sounds, sitting way up here, so lonely. His teacher was supposed to have come today. She hadn't. Mom and Dad, so busy drinking with people, gave Johnny the kind of look you give your shadow. Johnny retreated farther up the stairs into the complete, musty asylum of the abandoned attic. Even up here, the dust and warm afternoon quiet was rustled by the party noises from below. Johnny glanced around. There were four trunks sitting under veils of webs in the dim corners. A sunbeam fell through a small, dirty window, lighted things for Johnny's curious blue eyes. The trunk in the north corner, for instance, it was always locked, the key hidden somewhere. The halves were down now, but the brass tongue in the middle was flipped up, unlocked. Johnny walked to the trunk and pried the halves open. He pulled the lid up. Suddenly, the attic was very cold. She was inside. Curled up, her body was young, pretty. Her slender face was like chalk etched against the blackboard of her hair. Johnny gasped, but not too loudly. He held onto the trunk rim. Only her perfume was still alive. She looked as lonely and abandoned as he felt. He sympathized. Attics are places for things neglected and forgotten. Death had apparently come through suffocation. Someone had slammed the heavy, airtight lid down upon her curved loveliness. Her hand was like a white fragment of it against her filmy pink cocktail dress. A moment later, he found the balled wad of paper on the floor. It was only part of a note, with her writing on it. "You've got to make it up to me, the way I've been treated. It shouldn't be difficult. I would be Johnny's teacher. That would explain my presence in the house to everyone. Ellie." He looked at her quiet beauty. It seemed as if she might have fallen asleep during the cocktail party and had been carried here and the lid slammed down upon her while she slumbered. The attic dimness moved in about Johnny, shaking him, then drawing out, leaving him numbed and saying, "Are you my teacher? Are you the one I was going to have for myself alone? But they killed you? Why should anyone kill my teacher?" Another thought rushed the first away. He, Johnny Menlow, of the Society Menlows, had found the body, hadn't he? Sure. His eyes widened. Mom and Dad have to notice him now, more often. Why, even Grandma would quit playing chess all day, with Uncle Flinny choke on her brandy, stare at him through thick glasses and cry, "My God, child, your snooping finally comes to a profit, did it?" "Sure, sure," Johnny blinked rapidly, his heart pounding. "Cousin William might even faint at the news." He, Johnny Menlow, had found the body. Pictures in the papers of himself instead of mother beaming out of the society columns. hiding the note in his pocket. Johnny took one last long look at the pretty lashes and the pink lips and the dark black hair of the trunk lady. He closed the lid on her sleeping. He'd scream, yes, at the top of the grand stairs. Scream till the sky fell down and the party with it. Scream. His screaming wasn't bad at all. Down the stairs across the hall, making a path with his screaming through the startled ranks of people, Johnny reached Mother's glittering cocktail gown and held onto it very tightly. Johnny, Johnny, why are you downstairs? What's the matter? I told you. Mother's girl face looked down over the glitter. He grabbed another fistful of spangles. He yelled it. Mom, there's a body in the attic. Like faces in a football stadium, the faces watching them, Mother stiffened then relaxed. Let go my dress, darling. You'll get it dirty. Look at your hands, cobwebs and all. Now run up to your room like a good boy. She patted his head. But Mom, he wailed, there's a body. Good Lord, someone murmured, just like his father. Johnny spun angrily. You shut up. There is so a body. Mother didn't see him. She looked at her guests, and all Johnny could see was her lovely swan-like throat, the firm chin with the pulse beating under it, her fingers fixing the chestnut shine of hair swept up from her ears. Please forgive Johnny, she was saying. Children are so imaginative, aren't they? Her chin came down. There was no light in her blue eyes. You'd better go upstairs, Johnny. Oh, but Mom! His world was crashing. The spangles slipped from between his fingers. He suddenly hated everyone at the party, looking at him. You heard what your mother said, General. That was Dad's resonant voice, and it meant the fight was lost. Johnny jerked around, shot one last glare at the people, and ran upstairs, tears coming into his eyes. He twisted the brass knob of Grandma's door. She sat playing chess with Uncle Flinny before the great glaring window. Sunlight glinted off her glasses. She hardly looked up. Pardon me, Granny, but... She shifted her cane against her thin knee. Well? There's a body in the attic, and nobody'll believe me. Go away, Johnny. But he cried, there's a body! We know it, we know it. Now get Cousin William a bottle of cognac. Scat, go! Johnny went and got the cognac from the wine pantry, rapped on Cousin William's door, and thought he heard indrawn breath behind the paneling. Then Cousin William whispered quickly, who's there? Cognac. Oh, fine, fine. Cousin William's weak-chinned, rabbity face poked out, his soft hands darting after the offered liquor. Thank God. Now get away and let me get drunk. The door slammed, but before it did, Johnny got a brief glimpse of the cluttered, disorderly interior of Cousin William's designing room. The mannequins standing stiff around with brilliant silk draped cut fixed to them, watercolor sketches of capes, hats, suits, thumbtacked to the plaster walls, bright heaps of woolens, threaded spools, and all. The door cut it off, locked it in, and Cousin William was nervously tending to his cognac behind the shining knob. Johnny eyed the hall phone, his anger simmering. He thought of Mom and Dad dancing, Uncle Flinny and Grandma playing their eternal chess, Cousin William drinking, and himself a stranger in this great, old, echoing house. He snatched up the phone. Give me the police station. Another deep voice cut out the operators. Hang up the phone, Johnny. Hang up and go to bed. Dad's very resonant and cultured voice. Johnny hung up slowly. So this was his reward for finding a body. He sat and cried with frustration. He felt like the lady in the trunk. The lid slammed in his face by five people. Slammed! He was twisting in bed when Uncle Flinny softly opened the door and poked his curly, soft-haired big head into the room. His eyes were round, black, gentle, peaceful-looking. He came in with slow, soft movements, sat on the edge of the chair beside the bed like a very quiet little bird. He folded his bird-like fingers. "Since you're retiring early," he said, "I thought I'd better come tell your bedtime story early, too. Yes?" Johnny felt himself too old for stories. Being raised in such an adult house with few contacts with children, and having an advanced education with such mature talk and mature people around, he felt himself far above bedtime stories. But he resigned himself, sighed, and said, "Okay, Uncle Flinny, go ahead, shoot." Uncle Flinny held on to his neatly pressed black trousers at the knees as if they'd explode, and slowly pieced out his tale. "Well, once there was a young woman who was very beautiful." Uh-oh. Johnny'd heard this story 1,000 times before. He fidgeted. A body in the attic, and he had to listen to this. "And," continued Uncle Flinny, "this beautiful young girl fell in love with and married a young knight. They lived happily for years, until one day, a dark one kidnapped the beautiful woman and ran away with her." Uncle Flinny looked sad and old. "And then the husband came home," prompted Johnny. Uncle Flinny didn't hear him at all. He just kept talking in a funny, soft monotone. "The husband chased the dark one into a dark land. But no matter how hard he pleaded or tried to catch up with the dark one, he never could. His wife was gone forever. Forever." Uncle Flinny's breathing was uneven, harsh. His eyes glowed dark round. His lips trembled. He wasn't himself. He was someone else, off a million miles in that dark land. He seized his knees tighter and bent over them. "But the husband searched and searched, vowing that someday he would find and kill the dark one. And wonder of wonders, he did. He struck the dark one down. But oh God above, after striking the dark one, he found that somehow the dark one looked like his beautiful wife. And he found to his horror that he himself was growing darker and darker." The end, Johnny hoped there'd be no more. Uncle Flinny sat sighing in the atmosphere he'd built from his story. He'd forgotten Johnny was a part of the room. His hands were shaking and he was out of breath. He just sat there. Johnny shivered for no reason, he knew. Thanks very much, Uncle Flinny," he said. "Thanks for the swell story." Uncle Flinny turned blind eyes. He relaxed, recognizing Johnny. "Oh, yes, anytime at all." "You sure get steamed up, Uncle Flinny." Uncle Flinny quietly opened the door. "Good night, Johnny." "Oh, Uncle." "Yes?" Johnny stopped himself. "Never mind." Uncle Flinny shuffled out. The door closed gently. Johnny bounced furiously on the springs. "The things I've had to do the last few days to keep this family happy. Listen to Uncle Flinny, wait on Grandma, get out of the way of Mother, obey Father, and keep Cousin William drunk. Gah!" He was tired of them all. For a change, why not some attention for himself? He could hear the partying continuing downstairs. Slipping from bed, he listened against the door. In the next hour, he heard all varieties of feet upon the stairs like heartbeats in the house. The crisp, snapping moves of Grandma and her pert cane feeling the layers of altitude. The shuffle of Uncle Flinny. The even long and easy stride of Dad, the glide of Mother, the nervous, uneasy tripping of Uncle William. And there were voices, talking, some arguing, some urging, others hysterical, mixed, Dad calm, Mother criticizing. Grandma stern, Cousin William whimpering. Uncle Flinny quiet. Once or twice the attic door creaked. No one even came near Johnny's room. The party still existed downstairs, unaware of all this badinage. Night was coming swiftly on with an autumn chill. Finally, it was quiet again. Johnny hurried up the dark, dusty stairs into the attic, heart beating quickly. He'd show them. The trunk was not heavy, strangely enough. One could easily tip it toward the stair, and the stairs led down to the landing. One more push from the landing and down, down, down into the living room. Yes, they'd have to believe him now. Johnny tipped the trunk. The corpse. People were talking. Music was playing on the radio phonograph. Mom and Dad mingled with a bright swarm, flames about which social moths beat your sophisticated wings. It was in the very midst of these things that Johnny's small voice made some sort of declaration from atop the hall staircase. He yelled loudly, "Mom! Dad!" Everybody turned and looked like at a reception. The woman came down the stairs. Somebody had to scream. It sounded almost like Cousin William. But everybody watched, falling back as the woman came down the stairs in a filmy cocktail dress. Well, she didn't exactly come down. She rolled. Over and over, arms limp, legs limp, hair bobbing, hair flailing in a dark whip, around and down, softly nudging the steps, jointless, boneless, and lifeless. When she reached the bottom, Johnny was right after her. "I told you, Mother. Dad, I found her again. I found her." He'd always and forever remember Mother's face in that moment and the way she said his name. Johnny, and the way she struck him across the face. Someone said, "Call the police." Someone else had the phone, ticking it. Dad's face was like a wet, gray clam, suddenly old and tired. Johnny fell back from Mother's blow, holding to the banister. He thought, "She's never hit me before. Never before. Always kind and good. Thoughtless at times, maybe. But she never went and hit me before today." Then it happened. Everybody began laughing. Somebody pointed at the body. Their faces got red and they laughed. Dad laughed too, with everything but his eyes. "I'll be damned," someone said. "So that's the body the child found upstairs?" "A mannequin," someone declared. "Of course. A store window dummy. Easy to see how a child might think it's a body." Again laughter. Lots of it. "A mannequin." The laughter grew and grew upon itself. Johnny, trembling, crept and bent and touched the outflung hand, pulled away, touched it again, felt tremblingly the hard, cold plastic. "That's not the body," he said, looking up, bewildered. He shook his head, moving back. "That's not the body at all," he said. "The other body was different, warmish and soft. It was a real woman." "Johnny!" Dad had stopped smiling. Mother clenched a fist with white knuckles. Johnny said, "Just the same, it's not the one." He began to cry. Tears came as on the windshield of a car in a storm, erasing the world in wet portions. "Just the same, she was dead and she wasn't made of plaster." The house was full of sounds late that night. People talking in locked rooms, arguments. Once he thought he heard Cousin William sobbing. Feet climbed stairs, lights clicked on and off. Finally, everyone was in bed and Johnny sat up, throwing back the covers. That clicking was Cousin William's double-locking his door. Why? Because someone or something was walking around in the house? Johnny started. His doorknob was turning. The door pushed open a few inches. Someone was standing there in the darkness looking in. A heart is an erratic thing, like mercury. It scurries all over a person's insides. Johnny's heart was like mercury. The door remained open. The shadow remained standing in the doorway, staring, looking in. Johnny said nothing. Then very matter-of-factly, the shadow withdrew, and the door closed. Wrapping the lock home hard, Johnny threw his breath out and lay trembling on the door. Pressure from outside a moment later, from that withdrawn shadow, could not force the bolt. Johnny listened. The shadow went away. Very weakly, Johnny returned to bed, trembling. "Mom? Mom," he said to himself. "Are you mad at me for making a scene before all of society? Would you kill me, Mom? Was there something about the trunk lady and Dad? Something you didn't like? And did you kill her because of it? Now, when I come around in the way, what will you do to me? Oh, Mom, it can't be you." Daddy said the same way. "You made me hang up the phone. Are you afraid it will get out too? Afraid for your business, your money, your reputation at the club? Huh, Dad?" Was that you standing in the door, silent and dark, and thinking, "You've been my favorite in the family, but now, today, you're so quiet, and you don't even look at me." Cousin William. He could have changed the bodies, tried to fool Johnny. He could have put one of the mannequins in the trunk instead. Was she Cousin William's girlfriend? Was she causing trouble somehow? Or was Cousin William just afraid for his reputation? Him and his mannequins and his famous expensive dresses for expensive women. Was it him twisting the doorknob a moment ago? Maybe it was Uncle Flinny, with his bedtime stories and his quiet ways. He loved Mother so much, his sister. He'd do anything for her, or Dad, or Grandma, or Cousin William. Would he kill for her, or Dad, or the others to keep this house whole, intact, and untouched? Grandma played her cold game of chess day by day and drank her brandy neat. Her whole life was keeping the house moving together. Her whole life was society and position and taste. What if someone came into the house and tried to do all the ordering instead of her? What would she do? All of them. All of them. Johnny sank, shivering, back on the springs. A woman walked into a big, mothballed old mansion like this, and suddenly everyone was afraid. Just one woman. On the table beside his bed, Johnny groped and found the note he'd discovered in the attic dust. He felt of it and read it again in his mind. "You've got to make it up to me, the way I've been treated. It shouldn't be difficult. I could be Johnny's teacher. That would explain everything. Ellie." Johnny turned over. "Ellie, my teacher, where are you now?" he asked the darkness. Lonely and resting in Cousin William's studio with all the other stiffened mannequins, playing chess with Grandma, only not moving, in the cold, dark basement, like the wine cask put away for all the years. Somewhere in this big house tonight, but maybe not tomorrow, unless I find you before then. There was a huge backyard, with many acres to it. Fruit trees, a flower garden, the swimming pool, the bathhouse, servants' quarters, immediately behind the big house. Sunlight caught between a row of sycamore trees and a high green fence that shielded all this from the street. There was an oak tree to dangle from in the afternoon, and a policeman who walked his beat just under the tree on the sidewalk beyond the fence. Johnny climbed up and waited. The policeman walked below. Johnny rattled leaves. "Hi, son," the policeman looked up. "Better watch out, you'll fall." "I don't care," said Johnny. "We've got a dead lady in our house and everybody keeps it secret." The policeman made a smile. "You have you? Johnny shifted himself. I found her in a trunk. Somebody killed her. I tried to call the police last night, but Dad wouldn't let me. I tipped the trunk over, and she fell downstairs, but she turned out to be a wax doll. It wasn't the lady after all. So the policeman chuckled, enjoying it. But the other lady was real, insisted Johnny. What other lady? The first one I found. Cousin William's dress designer. He changed bodies. You should have seen everyone at the breakfast this morning, trying to be happy. Like in the movies. But they can't fool me. They're not happy. Mother looks tired, and she's real touchy. I wonder how long they can go around like this without yelling. The policeman scowled. Honest to God, you sound just like my kid. Him and his Buck Rogers, his disintegrators, and his comic books. Honest to God, it's a crime what they give the younger generation to read. Ruin their minds with it. Killing corpses. Ugh. But it's true! See you later, said the policeman, and walked on. Johnny clung there, and the tree trembled in the wind. Then he dropped down across the fence and gave chase. You got to come look. They'll take her away. If you don't, and then somebody'll never find her. The policeman was patient. Look, little boy, I can't go nowhere without no warrant. How do I know you're not lying? He was joking now. You've got to believe me. That's all. The policeman stuck out his hand. Here. Johnny took it. The policeman walked. Where are we going? Asked Johnny. To see your mother. No! Johnny squirmed frantically. That won't help. She'll hate me for it. She'll lie about it. The policeman firmly escorted him around front and thumbed the bell. First the maid and then mother was at the door, her face pale as milk, her lips a red smear against the white. Her pompadour was a little toppled over. There were blue pouches under her suddenly dull eyes. Johnny! Better keep him inside, ma'am, the policeman touched his cap. He'll get hurt running in the street. Thank you, officer. The officer looked at her, then at Johnny. Johnny started to speak, but he could only sob. Two tears ran down his cheeks as the door closed, shutting the officer outside. Mother didn't say anything to Johnny, not a word. She just stood there, lost and white, twisting her fingers. That was all. Let's play murder. Hours later in the day, Johnny wrote it all down upon a nickel tablet of paper. Everything he knew about the trunk lady. Everything he knew about Cousin William, Mom, Dad, Uncle Flinny, Grandma. Wetting his pencil, Johnny put it out in lines like this. The lady in the trunk loved Dad. Dad killed her when she came to the house. Johnny pouted over that one. Either that or Mom killed her. Long years of viewing motion picture murders went through Johnny's mind. Then, of course, Grandma or Uncle Flinny could have killed her because their authority and security was threatened. Yeah, Johnny scribbled quick. Let's see now. And Cousin William, maybe it was his woman friend, after all. Johnny sort of hoped it was. He wasn't very partial to Cousin William. Or maybe there was something in Grandma's past, or Uncle Flinny's. Now, how about... Johnny! Grandma's voice. Johnny put away the pad. Grandma came in the door and guided Johnny out through the hall and into her room, using her cane as a nervous prod. She seated him before the chessboard and nodded at the pale pieces. Those are yours. Mine are black. She thought it over, eyes closed. Mine are always black. We can't play, Johnny announced. Two of your black pieces are missing, he pointed. She looked. Uncle Flinny again, he's always taking some of my players. Always and forever. We'll play anyway. I'll use what I have. Move. She jabbed a skinny finger. Where's Uncle Flinny? Watering the garden. Move, she ordered. Her eyes watched his fingers in their path. She leaned forward slowly over the shining pieces. We're all good people, Johnny. We led a good life, these 20 years in this house. You've been it only part of the 20. We never asked for trouble. Don't make us any, Johnny. He sat there. A fly buzzed against the large window. Far away below, water ran from a faucet. I don't want trouble, he said. The chessboard blurred and ran away like colored water. Dad looked so white and funny at breakfast today. Why should he feel that way over a wax doll, Grandma? And Mom, she looks like she's all twisted up like a spring inside, a clock, ready to bust loose. There's no way to act over a doll, is it? Grandma deliberated over her bishop, withdrawn into herself like an old hermit crab in a shell at lace. There was no body, just your imagination. Forget it, forget it. She glared at the child as if he were responsible. Walk light from now on, Sonny. Keep quiet and keep out of the way and forget it. Someone's got to tell you these things. Don't know why it's always me, but just forget it. They played chess until twilight. Then the house got dark again too quickly. Everybody hurried through supper, and it seemed that everybody went to bed early too. Johnny listened to the hours chiming out one by one. Someone rapped on the door. Johnny said, "Who is it?" "Uncle Flinny." "What do you want, Uncle Flinny?" "Time for your bedtime story, Johnny." "Oh, well, not tonight, please, Uncle Flinny." "Yes, please. This is a very special story. A very extra special bedtime story." Johnny waited. Then, "I'm tired, Uncle Flinny. Some other time, huh?" "Not tonight, please." Uncle Flinny went away, and after a while, the clock chimed again. It was after 10. More time. After 11. More time. Almost 12. Johnny opened the door. The house was completely asleep. You could tell by the quiet, untouched gleam on the long hall stairs. Clear moonlight pouring through great areas of glass and no shadow moving. Johnny closed the door behind him. From off somewhere in a quiet land, Grandma breathed heavily in her great four-poster bed. There was a tinkling noise, very faintly, as if bottles were being cautiously rattled behind Cousin William's door. Johnny paused at the staircase. All he had to do would be return to bed and forget about it. Believe that it was all a mistake and there would be no trouble. It would be forgotten and things would take up where they'd been a few days ago. Mother would laugh at her parties. Dad would drive back and forth to the office with his thick briefcase. Grandma would sneak her brandy on the side. Cousin William would insert needles into mannequin flesh. And Uncle Flinny would go on forever retelling his feverish bedtime stories that meant nothing. Yet it was not so easy as that. Things could not go back now, only ahead. You can't forget. Dad, his only friend, was a stranger now, since the incident. Mother was worse than ever. Her eyes looked like they cried at night. Down under the glitter, she had to live too. And Grandma, she'd drink two bottles instead of one bottle of brandy a week. And Cousin William, every time he stuck a pin into a mannequin, he'd think of the trunk lady. Blanche cringe and start whimpering over his cognac. And she, the lovely dark-haired stranger in the musty trunk, had looked so lonely up there where he'd found her, so apart. There was a bond between them. She was a stranger to the house and was killed for it. Johnny was a stranger in the house now, too. He wanted to find her again because of that. They were almost brother and sister. She needed finding. She needed to be remembered, not to be forgotten. Johnny went down each step with careful footing. He clung to the banister, sliding his fingers. She would
not be in the attic now, nor would she be in any of the upstairs rooms. How could they sleep with her so near them? Downstairs, perhaps. Somewhere in the accumulated night of the house. Not in the servants' quarters. He had just reached the stair bottom when he heard one of the upstairs doors open very slowly and close. After that, there was not a sound, but quite calmly, quietly, someone came and stood at the top of the stairs looking down. Johnny froze. He leaned against the wall like a shadow. Sweat came out on his face and trickled in the small palms of his hand. He could not see who it was. They just stood there watching, looking down, silent and waiting. Things had to go on. You can't lie in bed and forget. Johnny couldn't just forget the stranger, the trunk lady, in her lonely attitude of death. The murderer, too, could not forget easily. Now that there was a small boy in the house who was too curious, too incautious. Johnny breathed very slowly. He waited a moment. Then, when he saw that the person at the top of the stairs was not coming down, he moved quickly down the hall, into the kitchen, and out the back door into the moonlit veldt of the garden. The swimming pool, a flat and shining square, with a fringe of trees beyond it, stars over it, the bathhouse near it. The low garden rose to left and right, farther down the greenhouse and the tool shed. Johnny ran. The shadows of the tool shed offered temporary haven. Looking back, he detected no movement in the house, no light. The body would most probably be in one of these outlying houses. His bed would feel nice now. The lock on the door would be nice. Johnny trembled like the water in the pool. Suddenly, he saw someone standing in the upstairs hall window. There was just a hint of a standing figure there, looking down as it had looked from the top of the stairs. Then, it was gone. Now, down the gravel drive on the side of the house, footsteps sounded. Someone was coming from the front of the house, around under the sycamores, someone moving in sycamore shadows, stealthy and unseen. Then, very suddenly, breaking into half flight, she was there. She! Not mother, nor grandmother, but emerging half into moonlight, half in its shadow, was the trunk lady. She looked at Johnny far across the garden and said nothing. Johnny swallowed tightly and blinked. He held onto himself, his thighs, his knees with clenched fingers. He crouched and squinted and stared in raw disbelief. A night wind set the sycamore leaves to shivering. From way, way off, an auto horn hooted like a lonely owl. She was not dead after all. The whole house had tried to fool him. This was some fantastic jest he could not understand. They were all against him. His teacher was alive. There was no murder, no death. She was here for him alone, in his hour of loneliness. She was here. He darted out into the moonlight, panting, not yelling, not laughing. He ran towards her across the grass, to the tiles of the swimming pool, across the tiles, around the pool, and toward the sycamores. She stood waiting for him, arms outstretched, to take him into their soft embrace, sycamore shadow stirring over her cocktail dress, setting it into dreamy motion. He said, "Ellie, is that you?" He reached the rim of stirring shadow and screamed. The universe seemed suddenly to explode. The cocktail dress whirled madly, now toppling in a drunken insanity. The trunk lady bent, and there came a hoarse, panting sound. She was fainting. No, she was falling. A shadow hit him across the face, jarring his senses once, twice, three times. He fell to his knees, and before he could rise, fingers were over his face. Fingers that numbed him, gripping tight his sobbing mouth. Mother! The thought slammed him. Mother, dressed in the trunk lady's cocktail dress? Decoying him out into her arms? Fooling him? Mother, don't kill me. Don't kill me, he cried. I'm sorry. I tried to bring the police. Mother, you love father. Is that why you killed Ellie? Mother, let me go. Mother, you look so much like her, standing in the sycamore shadows. But the hands would not let him go. There was a rushing of a body against him, a series of shocks. The fingers were so strong, so much thicker than they should be. Much thicker. Johnny screamed inwardly, drawing air in an awful slobbing whistle. The house leaned over him as if to collapse and crush him in its fall. The great old sleeping house with everyone sleeping in it, unaware that the silent struggle was happening there at the flat shine of the pool. Suddenly he realized that it was not Mother, not the trunk lady. The fingers were too strong. Who is stronger than Mother? Sterner, more quick and hard? Grandmother, perhaps? The body was too hard against him. He half broke free and saw the flat of moonlight, the filmy cocktail dress lying alone sprawled, and a mannequin hand thrown out into the light. The mannequin was on the ground, dead, plastic, cold. Someone else was behind Johnny, holding, fighting. Cousin William! But there was no smell of cognac. The actions were the actions of a sober man. The breath was clean and clear and quick, almost sobbing. Father! Dad, he tried to yell. Don't! Please, don't! Then a voice was talking. Something black and small clattered on the tiles beside the swirling water, and Johnny suddenly knew. The hands were tight, the voice tighter, whispering, "You hurt your mother." "I didn't mean to," Johnny screamed inwardly. "If it hadn't been for you," said the voice, whispering, "your mother would never have known about the Dark One dying." "I didn't mean to find the trunk lady," cried Johnny, silently fighting. "It'll kill her, the shock of it. If she dies, I won't want to live. She's all I've ever had since 20 years ago when it all happened." The voice hushed on. "Ellie came to the party. They tried to fool me, make out she was somebody else. But I guessed. She came upstairs in her cocktail dress, and I gave her a glass of brandy with sleeping powder in it. And I put her to gentle sleep in the old, old trunk. Nobody would have known if you hadn't looked. Ellie would have just disappeared forever. Only Grandma and me would know. But you're dark, too. You're dark, just like Ellie," the voice whispered. "Sometimes when I look at you, I see her face. So now, the Dark One," Johnny's mind spun, ached, and thrust to get free. "Uncle Flinny! Uncle Flinny," he thought. "Why do you call Ellie the Dark One? Why?" "Your bedtime stories, Uncle Flinny. For so many years, you've told the same story. The same strange story about the Dark One and the beautiful woman. And now the Dark One came to be my teacher. And why did you kill her? What did she do to you? Why do you call her the Dark One? What does the bedtime story mean? I don't know." "Don't kill me, Uncle Flinny. The water's cold and shining tonight. I don't want to be under the cold shine of it." Johnny grabbed onto the body behind him and fell forward. The two of them plunged screaming into the pool. There was a great plunging nausea. The fingers released him. There was a fighting in wet darkness, water stabbing his nostrils, bubbles breaking from his lips. When Johnny broke surface, there was a great sound of air rising from below, a dim surging of an old man jerking against the lazy tide. The man never came to the surface again. Just the bubbles came. Johnny was crying, screaming to himself, as he dragged himself from the pool and saw her lying there, so lonely and tired, the mannequin in the cocktail dress. His foot knocked something dark and small rolling on the tiles. He picked it up. One of the dark chess pieces. Uncle Flinny was always stealing them. The chess set from Grandma's room. Johnny held it tight, not seeing it really, and looked at the pool with the slowly ripples on it where Uncle Flinny slept below. It was so crazy he couldn't stand it. He looked at the house through blurred eyes, and he was shaking like a sick dog. Lights were clicking on all over it, windows and squares of yellow and orange. Father was running downstairs, shouting, and the back door was opening just as Johnny collapsed, sobbing, upon the cold, hard tiles. Mother sat on one side of the bed, Dad on the other side. Johnny got his crying all out of him and lay back and looked at Dad, then Mom. Mom? She said nothing, but smiled weakly and held onto his hand so tightly. Mom, oh Mom, Johnny said, I'm so tired, but I can't sleep. Why? Why, Dad? He looked at Dad again. Dad, what happened? I don't know. Dad found it hard to say. He said it anyway. Uncle Flinny was married 20 years ago. His wife died when their baby was born. Uncle Flinny loved his wife very much. She was very beautiful and good. Uncle Flinny hated the baby. He'd have nothing to do with it. He thought the baby was a murderer. You can understand how he felt, can't you? You can understand how I'd feel if Mother died. Johnny nodded weakly, not too sure at all that he understood. Uncle Flinny put the baby in a girl's home somewhere. He wouldn't tell us where. She grew up bitter, hating Uncle Flinny because he treated her unfairly. After all, she didn't ask to be born. You see, son, he said. Yeah, Dad. Well, just a month ago, Ellie, the baby, grown up now, found out where we live somehow. She wrote a letter. We offered her a job as your teacher, which was only right and deserving. We thought to keep it secret from your uncle. When Ellie came and went upstairs during the party, Uncle Flinny guessed who she was. Dad couldn't speak for a moment. He closed his eyes. Then, you found her in the attic. We tried to keep it quiet. We tried to make you forget. It was no use. We could never forget ourselves. It was bound to come out. There was so much at stake, though all our lives, we tried to work it out quietly. Things like money and reputations and businesses and what people would say made us do it, son. And really, they're not worth a damn, son. Johnny turned his head. I kept poking my nose in. You are our conscience, I guess. A rather active symbol. You kept the house stirred up. Uncle Flinny thought you were hurting your mother. Your mother, his sister, was all that he had after his wife's death. So he tried to make it look like I was drowned in the pool? Mother suddenly bent and held on to Johnny closely. I'm sorry, Johnny. Sometimes we're blind. I didn't think he'd do that. What about the police? The truth? Flinny killed her and committed suicide. Mother's voice seemed distant and removed and tired. Johnny heard himself talking. Uncle Flinny used to tell me bedtime stories, Mom. I still don't understand. All about the dark one and the beautiful wife and... Someday when you're older, you'll understand. Poor Ellie. She was always the dark one. Things were fading away, away. It was all overdone. No more bedtime stories, Mom, please. No more, huh? Out of the tired darkness, Mom said. No more, Johnny. Johnny rolled wearily over into dreams. His left hand opened, and the small black object in it fell clattering to the bedroom floor. He was asleep even before the black night ceased rolling.